Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am Ajito Ryo Master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
Here on the Absolution Network. Yeah, you've been getting many, many special episodes here on the Absolution Network. The Richie Branson interview, the Wizard World special, among others. You know, E3 a couple days ago. And now I bring to you my Anime Next 2012 convention report. Though I don't know how much I can report, only coming one day to a convention, but we'll get into that. But yeah, convention report, because, like I said, past 2 weeks, tons of stuff been happening. It started with Wizard World Philadelphia. It in the middle, you had E3, which, you know, me and Chris covered. And, of course, this past weekend, I was at Anime Next in, I want to say it's in New Brunswick, New Jersey. I think it's probably the closest bigger city. You know, it's around Rutgers University and, you know, that area. And, you know, it was a very nice con. You know, it's always funny. I think everybody pretty much, when they think of what the con layout going to be, they're always comparing it to other cons that they've been to. And so, like, for me, I'm always comparing every convention to an extent to, like, Metro. By the way, when I say Metro, I meant MetroCon down in Tampa, or ShadowCon, which is in a hotel. And, you know, being that DoubleTree Inn was a part of the convention here, I thought it was going to be maybe a bit smaller than I thought it would be, but yeah, it turned out to be this, like, big thing spanning the grounds of a convention center and a hotel. We'll get to all that, though, in just a second, because, again, this is a convention report. So, but, you know, I had a wonderful time. I want to thank the press staff, the press coordinator. It's Cordo. I hope I'm saying your name right. I'm probably screwing it up. I apologize. No language is my first language, ladies and gentlemen. I screw up everything. But, you know, I'm going to give you my con report, then we have some interviews to present to you as I interviewed three guests there. Michelle Knotts, who you probably best know as Jesse on current iterations of Pokemon, along with voicing characters in shows like Queen's Blade and Nikki Tosin. The legendary Kyle Hebert, you know, Teen Gohan and narrator in Dragon Ball Z, among other characters he plays in that show, like Kamina and Gurren Lagann, Ryu in the Street Fighter series right now, not the series anime, but the video game series coming out, you know, Super Street Fighter 4, Marvel vs. Capcom 3, just name a few, and Kara Edwards, you know, who's been in Heaven's Lost Property. And I kind of blanked there because I was about to pronounce it by its Japanese name, Soto Oto Oshigimi. Sacred Blacksmith. She was in Dragon Ball Z as Goten. You know, to name a few. So, got those interviews to come. But with that being said, it is time. It is time. It is time. For the Anime Next 2012 Convention Report.
Last name Man, first name Mega. I be killing tracks like I'm blasting Dr. Wily on Sega. Capcom swagger like Balrog, Bison, and Vega. Never let up till I'm the greatest otaku rapper ever. Better than half these rappers repping that nerd culture. Richie, show them how to move in a room full of vultures. Seems kinda overconfident, but I'm not boasting. I'm competing, I'm just taking shots before they reach they holsters. And DJ Khaled said it best, all I do is win. Going in and I won't stop till my name's spinning like a hurricane kick from Ken. Or better yet, I might go psycho like a combo move from M. Bison. If rapping was a video game, I'd get a perfect 10 on IGN. I'm chilling in my den reading Tokyo Pop mangas. They came with this cosplay poster that I forgot to hang up. These other rappers think they good, but they really suck. Otaku certified, all your base are belong to us. Richie
Branson, you have defeated every other otaku gang. You are now Otaku King. No one can defeat you.
And welcome back, and let's get right into it. Something I kind of noticed I did with the Wizard World convention report. I kind of did a whole day-by-day thing, and then I did pros and cons, where I kind of sort of reiterated, well, not reiterated, I briefly went over the things I did on the day-by-day, but did that quickly, and then I went a little bit more deeply into it, pros and cons. I'm doing a bit differently here, because I was only there one day, and for the most part, I kind of felt I was repeating myself a lot during that convention report, and I could have just put them together. So, basically, I got there around 9 a.m., waited about an hour to get my press pass, because the press thing wasn't open until 10, but once that happened, I went off, actually looked for a few cosplays, made a quick trip into Artist Alley, take a look around, before, one thing actually, this is the pro, and I liked this from the, you know, the press people at Anime Next. They actually had set up, or should I say the press coordinator himself had actually set up a sort of time for some press to network together. As it turns out, it was really only one or two groups. Me, I don't know if I can call myself a group. It's me. I'm the only one representing the Absolution Network and the other 132 production stuff. But me and another group, as I, you know, really, I should have, you know, you'd think I'd have this all set up just to tell you and not have to get up from my seat to, and move and all this stuff. But the Anime Gamers, Evan Minto, Editor-in-Chief, hope I'm getting it right. You can find their site at www.anigamers.com. That's AniGamers.com. Met them. We had a very wonderful talk with them about anime. Very much enjoyed it, but, you know, it was us networking. From there, went back out, made a trip around the grounds. In fact, made a trip around the grounds taking pictures of cosplay, checking out the vendor hall, which I only did once because, you know, I really wanted to be up about this con, and I didn't want to feel down all day about, oh my god, I wish I had money to buy that, and that, and that, and that, and that, which is, again, I'm not adding it as a pro or a con. It's just a matter, I don't have anybody. I'm in a vendor hall where there's a Dragon Zord. Yes, it's $100, but I would pay $100 for the Dragon Zord from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. You know, it's kind of funny. That's $100, and the very high-detailed Katsumi in a very, very revealing bathing suit is only $60. I would think that you'd flip those prices at the very least. But we're not going to get into that. But, you know, did that. Then went back. And mind you, as I was traveling to place to place, I was looking for cosplayers to take pictures of all the time. So I didn't go straight to a place. I'd be going straight towards something I'd be going to, and I'd find a cosplayer like, oh, you're a great cosplayer. And my whole mindset of which cosplayers I took pictures of wasn't just, oh, are you a hot girl in a cosplay outfit? I was searching for good and unique cosplay, both man and woman, that really stood out to me. And we'll get to the whole cosplay aspect in a second. But, you know, basically, from there, I finally went back to the room, because in the same room, they had the press networking, they had the interviews. It actually ran behind a little bit, because before the American voice actors were interviewed, they had people who wanted to interview. They had a J-pop group whose name is escaping me. I apologize. Because I really actually didn't pay attention to them. I was really there for the voice actors to talk with them. But they had to do two interviews, and they ran a bit over. But from there, pretty much, I did an interview with Michelle Knotts, then I did an interview with Kyle Hebert, and then another group came in, they did an interview, and then both of us did single interviews with Cara Edwards, and, you know, Michelle Knotts was wonderful. I can't wait to play her interview. Her interview was great. And then, you know, Kyle and Kara. And I'm going to tell you, folks, one way or another, I'm getting Kara on 8 Crazy Nights this year. But and I may ask Kyle to come back. The kind of reason I didn't ask him before was because I had him on the Christmas special before. But I think we can have fun doing, again, another holiday special. But, you know, Kyle and Kara were just excellent. A lot of fun doing their interviews. And then from there, pretty much the rest of my day was going around taking pictures of cosplay. And like I said, you know, a lot of people think, oh, a guy my size taking pictures of cosplay, I'm usually only looking for the hot girls in cosplay. And I know there's a lot of people that complain about that. And I just, you know what? I like good cosplay. It doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman. It, you know, you can, as long as it looks unique to me and it really captures me, I'm going to take a picture of it. It's like, there was a guy who's, you'll see on the photo journals that I'll be posting up after this episode. So check for that throughout the week. There was a Joker who looked like a nice Joker. Very good, but he had this thing bag, and it caught my eye, and what he had done is he had taken, like, a silver bag, and he put a label on it that said, bath salts. And he was saying, he's taking over the world with bath salts. And for those who have no idea why that's relevant, the whole story down in Miami of cannibalism, and the homeless guys eating each other, apparently had a lot, bath salts had to do something with that. So, I found that funny and unique. Again, very interesting him to integrate something recent into a cosplay character that he was doing. And I took a picture of him. I mean, there's a lot of good, I also have some pictures of maybe some cosplay people might say, why is that good? But it's about how you hold yourself. It's, you know, how you present yourself and, you know, your craftsmanship and that stuff. You know, there were some unique cosplay. There were a couple guys, and again, you'll see their pictures, and I'll be talking about them more in a second. But there were people dressed as, you know, Waldorf and Stantler from the Muppets. There was a Devo guy. There was a Freakazoid. There were people from Blaze Blue, and just tons of great cosplay. I wish I would have taken more pictures. I took so many pictures, but I still wish I took more pictures, because there was so much great cosplay. But there's, like, friends on Facebook I unfortunately didn't get to see, including one friend. She was dressed up as a Martian, and I saw her in the distance, but I wasn't able to catch up with her. So as many pictures as I took, and I took tons, and you're going to see a lot of posts of pictures. It is something to where, yeah, I wish I would have taken more. It made me really feel I wish I was there for more one day, you know. I didn't go to any panels, because again, I was really there to focus on doing interviews and taking cosplay pictures. Even though I got tons, I still wish I would have gotten more. So, on to sort of pros and cons. Pros: for some reason, I really love the convention layout. You know, like I said, it was a combination. There was this convention center that I guess was connected with this hotel. And it was this very nice little path where you sort of walk down this hill over this little bridge that goes over this little creek. And then you walk up to the hotel. And so the convention, you know, the panel rooms and I think stuff like that was in the DoubleTree Hotel. Whereas, you know, the Artist Alley, registration, the vendors, and I guess the stage for, like, the couple of big events and, you know, the concerts were in the big convention center. But I think for some reason I like that. I mean, it was a lot of work to travel. I was very tired by the end of the day. And I want to add something. I was doing this convention while I was getting over, actually, a cold. I'd caught that con bug at Wizard World, and I got a cold, and it was really bad on Wednesday and Thursday, and I actually didn't know if I was actually going to go to Anime Next, but I was able to battle it back, and I was able to feel good enough to go. I'm still actually, you can't hear it because I do such a wonderful job of editing as I peel back the curtain, but I'm still kind of coughing and getting over the cold a bit, but yeah, for some reason, I really loved it. I guess I just loved sort of the travel in the hills, and there was tons of shade, and it just didn't feel like work. Whereas the setup for Wizard World, which probably was actually much smaller than I thought or was like making it out to be, it just felt like it was a lot of work to travel to panels and to the theater and stuff, whereas here, it didn't. And maybe that was because there was so much great cosplay that I wasn't going back and forth. I was, let me stop and take a picture, then move forward. And so it didn't seem like it was a hassle to me. But again, I really do like sort of that the convention layout. Love the staff. Staff was excellent. That's a big pro for me. The cosplay, again, I was talking about before. And I'll be talking about my favorite cosplays in a second. But the cosplaying was just excellent. And even the people I wasn't able to get pictures of, and I've seen pictures from people on Facebook from the other days, just spectacular, wide variety. It wasn't like, you know, I think I can safely say sort of the big cosplay of the year was Panty and Stockings. I mean, there were your bunches of Naruto's, bunches of Bleach, and as you usually get. There was a lot of Fairy Tail. There was a lot of One Piece. And sort of the big new sort of, I guess, girl cosplay this year. I say girl because, like, last year the big thing was Yoko. Actually, the past 2 years it was Yoko. And I was seeing tons and tons of Yoko. This year it's Panty and Stockings. So Gynex, I guess, is 2 for 2 on those shows, at least as far as cosplaying is concerned. But there was a lot of that, but there was, like, superhero characters, like, you know, I mentioned the Joker. I saw Duke Nukem, I saw Mortal Kombat, I saw Sailor Moon, like I said, I saw Freakazoid, Deadpool, Dante, there was a Bayonetta, and again, I'll be talking about her in a second. So, yeah, just many great cosplay. I really don't have anything to say about the panels, because again, like I said, I didn't go to any panels, unfortunately. Spent too much time taking pictures. But next year, I'm definitely going to try to aim for all 3 days of Anime Next. And I'll definitely have to check out more panels. Hopefully, more importantly, I'll have panels to do at Anime Next, now that I know that the panels go quickly. And I'll be prepared next year. Cons for this convention, I really don't have any, other than I was only able to go for 1 day. And that's, again, it's not the convention's fault. It really felt like the day went by too quickly for me. I mean, I enjoyed it. But, I mean, that's the only con I can think of, because I pretty much enjoyed my entire experience there. I don't feel like I can give this a perfect 10 out of 10, only because I wasn't there. I didn't experience any panels. I didn't do a quite inclusive experience of the convention. I feel to give it a perfect 10. And again, most of that was due to the fact that I was working, making sure I got a lot of pictures, or try to get a lot of pictures for the site, trying to, you know, make sure I got interviews. Oh, though, another con is, I have a con on myself. I need to learn to work the camera better, because there are some pictures, and you'll see them, that are kind of a little blurry. So that was more due to the fact that I had the camera on auto, and the way the lighting in the convention center, and for that matter, in the hotel, was working on, the camera, but that's besides the point. But it was a really great con, so I think I will give Anime Next 2012 a 9 out of 10. Yes, I'm rating it better than Wizard World, even though I was only there for 1 day. You know, at the end of the day, Wizard World was a great experience. You know, really my first sort of pop culture con, though I would really call it more of a comic book con. But again, you're with sort of comic book fans, and I have nothing against comic book fans, but my home will always be anime fans, and it's, I don't know why it is, but it always seems like anime fans are always more welcoming. Anime fans are always, you know, more happy to be there. I really don't know how to explain it, but it's just like, I felt home. You know, it's that same experience I've always had at MetroCon. I'm home. I'm surrounded by family. Which, I know some people might seem strange, but I didn't feel that it was a role. I didn't feel like I was home or I was surrounded by family or like people. I kind of knew I was at a convention. You know? It felt like it was more, Wizard World felt like it was more about the convention itself than it was the people at the convention. Whereas at, you know, Anime Next, and I've also felt this at MetroCon, yeah, there's, you know, the guests that are there, and it's about them and everything, and it's about the convention, but the convention itself is more about the people. It's about the people you meet, the people you get to see, the cosplayers. There's more to the people making the convention than it is the convention making the people, which I feel it's with Wizard World, which I guess is a sort of a new con to say I have for Wizard World, due to my experience at Anime Next, but I don't know, you know. But yeah, I definitely enjoyed Anime Next. I will definitely be putting more emphasis on going all 3 days there, even if I only have to go 1 day at Wizard World. I definitely think I enjoyed Anime Next better than Wizard World. And so a 9 out of 10, I highly suggest going to Anime Next. It's a great convention. And I look forward to going next year, not only going next year, but hopefully trying to help make the convention better next year with panels. So, people who go to Anime Next, keep on the lookout for me, hopefully next year, in my panels. Before we move on to interviews, I do want to go over cosplay, which I kind of forgot, so I apologize. I kept saying I was going to go over it. Like I said, the cosplay was absolutely excellent. And I just want to go over some of my favorite pieces. Again, you're going to be seeing a lot of these in the, you know, the photo journal. I think my favorite overall is two people. The first one was a guy who was dressed in a cosplay that nobody got. And in fact, I believe he told me I was the first person to get who he was. And there was a guy who was dressed like a Devo band member from the music video Whip It. You guys don't know who Devo is? Here, let me give you a let me give you a look. Song, and wow, I feel really old for the fact that I was the first person to remember who Devo is. But yeah, it was a great cosplay. I loved the fact that he was dressed as Devo. It was interesting. It was unique. It was something different. He hit all the feelings that you needed for Devo. It was just a great cosplay. I mean, besides the fact that it was making me feel like an old person because I remember who the hell Devo is. The other favorite cosplay I actually ran to on my last run through the convention to find cosplays to take pictures of, and that was, there was a couple of guys cosplaying as Wadoff and Stantler from the Muppets. Again, you'll see pictures of them more, like, I guess you would say more human Wadoff and Stantlers. About the only thing they didn't do was, you know, make themselves bald, but that can be forgiven. It was just great cosplay, and the way they acted, they were really into the characters, and wow, yes, great job by them. Great cosplay. And I guess those are just two of my personal favorites, because I guess maybe it's more of the nostalgic feel for that. There was many great cosplay. There was a young woman who was, I'm blanking on the name of the character. I want to say Luisa or Luis Chameleon, I believe her name is. I'm probably getting it completely wrong. But she's sort of that female cop from the Blaze Blue fighting games. I got a couple of pictures with her because she had a wonderful cosplay. There was a great Doctor Who, a great Afro Samurai. Some of my favorites, there was a couple, but I was only able to capture one lollipop chainsaw. But she was great. There was a pink Deadpool. Somebody had made a pink Deadpool costume. And when I say pink, I mean the, I'm blanking on the name of the organization, but the whole organization that collects money for women, you know, breast cancer awareness and that stuff, and the whole Susie Coleman, I believe it is. And he actually had a Susie Coleman patch on his Deadpool costume. I thought that was incredible, and I commend him on that costume. Speaking of Deadpool, actually, the photos I captured with this Deadpool is of a Dante, or I should say with a Dante. And that Dante was very good. In fact, I think I caught him earlier in the day with a Bayonetta. That's actually, I kind of forgot to mention it. That was near the top of my list of my favorite cosplays I saw there. Her Bayonetta was absolutely awesome. So I can't wait to post that. I ran into a friend that I have on Facebook who was a Yoko. She was absolutely gorgeous as Yoko. Great job on her. Like I said, a lot of good stockings, or I should say panties and stockings. There was including some garter belts out there as well that did a great job. There was a young woman who was a Princess Tutu. That was definitely one of my favorites because, again, that's one of my favorite shows. And it's very hard to find people who, you know, cosplay as Princess Tutu. So she did a great job. Again, most of this you will see on the cosplay photo journal that I'll be putting up. There was a Jet from Final Fantasy X there that was wonderful. There was a guy who was cosplaying as Macho Man Randy Savage. That definitely gets a thumbs up from me. Overall, just a great bunch of cosplay I was able to capture. And again, you'll be seeing it in the coming days here on the Absolution Network. So with that being said, let's get into our interviews. So first up, we're going to have Michelle Knotts, who was able to sit down and give us 10 minutes of her time. I give her a couple questions, and from there, it will be Kyle Hebert and then Cara Edwards. So I'm going to play the interviews for you, and I will be back after the interviews. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, people of all ages, the Absolution Network proudly brings to you Tom's Prerogative Special Anime Next Interview Specials. And we like to remind you, if you're not down with that, we've got two words for you. Stay golden. So first up, we are here with Michelle Knotts.
Hello.
Like Knott's Berry Farm or Don Knotts. Do, 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 do. That, wait, that's the wrong. That's not the Andy Griffin theme. No. See, my old age is getting to me at all.
Get if you. I was related to Don Knotts, that would be awesome. That would be great. Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not.
But you know, she's done Pokemon, probably best know her as Jessie from Team Rocket, the evil corporation that Ash can't seem to figure out every time is after him. It's like at some point,
or how to capture Pikachu.
Yeah. See, at some point you figure, wait a minute, that's a disguise, isn't it? But no, she's here. She's going to give us a couple of minutes. So first off, let's start with a generally easy question and let us know, how did you get into the industry?
Well, that might be a long answer, but I won't keep it too long. let's see. Well, I was a theater major in college, and then I transferred schools, and I studied radio and television broadcasting. So first I got into news, and I worked at a local CBS and NBC affiliate in Pennsylvania, and then I moved back here to New Jersey. I'm from New Jersey. Yay, Jersey!
Yay, Jersey!
And
We're better than Florida!
I worked at MSNBC for a little bit, and I didn't like news. And I loved cartoons, and I loved animation. I especially loved anime. Love Japanese animation. And I used to watch, they had, like, The Rising Sun and Toonami on, because I worked all different countries.
Which is back, by the way.
Yay! I'm so happy. So I used to watch that during my breaks. And a lot of my coworkers would say, why don't you get into that? You know, you seem like you really like that more than news. Because news was too depressing to me. It was too real. So that was kind of my transition to voiceovers. And I don't know if you heard of the Big Apple Anime Fest in 2003. I entered into the voice acting contest and I won, which was cool. So my first role was Hajime Yagi in The World of Narwhal. And from there, I said, this is what I want to do for a living. You know, I'd rather do this than work in news or radio or anything. I really want to bring characters to life, you know, and this is where I want to be. So I, you know, got a voice coach and I made a demo and I, like, the rest is history.
It takes off from
there. Took off from there, yeah.
Well, so obviously you're not the first person to play Jessie from Pokemon,
right.
Yes.
We started season 9.
Season 9. But you're still part of a massive franchise that's slowly taking over the world. You know, when the nuclear bomb drops, it's going to be like cockroaches and Pokemon. But being part of such a massive franchise like Pokemon, does the voice work get easier or harder as you go along?
For that specific show, It always depends because there's always new Pokemon coming up. Like, right now I'm the voice of Snivy and, like, a bunch of other different Pokemon, like Cottonee and Machino. And there's always different little nuances about the Pokemon that you kind of have to, you know, bring them to life, like the original Japanese Sidiu or the voice actors that they bring them to life. So there's always challenges when it comes to voiceovers, especially when you're auditioning for different things like video games or audiobooks or commercials or things like that. There's always different challenges. So I don't like to get lazy with what I do. I always like to practice and prepare and, you know, definitely stay focused.
Yeah.
With what I'm doing. Yep.
So next question is, you've done some dark, serious roles and you've done some light comedic roles like, oh, I don't know, Ikitosen, Queensblade, whatever other fan service shows you've done that I enjoy. As I look at my imaginary watch, don't worry, I did that to Scott McNeil too. So, which do you prefer more, dark serious roles or light comedic roles?
I don't know. I kind of like both because it always brings your acting skills to life more. Because I was a theater major and then I did radio and TV broadcasting, but I'm like, the most important word that I say in voice acting is acting. So for all you wannabe voice actors out there, take acting classes.
Acting!
Acting!
Like the ghost from Doug Walker. Timing! Which also goes along with acting!
To play like darker series or lighter series, I think it really brings a challenge to voice actors and actresses. Yes. And if you could bring that to the table, then people think that's great. That you're not just, you know, typecasted. You're not just doing one, you know, particular role. You're not focused on just being funny. You're not just focused on just being serious. You know, you can do other things.
Absolutely.
So, which is cool.
Oh, absolutely. Trust me. I love Ikitosen and Queensblade. So, you don't want to ask. So besides, of course, all your Pokemon roles, outside of that, which roles besides those have you bonded with the most?
Have I bonded with the most? Wow.
Like maybe a connection, closer connection to the characters.
It's funny because always when you audition for something in voice acting, you have to try and become that character to make it more believable and make it more real. I don't know. I think the most that I've bonded with, her name is Ogiwe Chika in Genshiken. And Genshiken is an anime series about anime fans.
Oh, it's about otaku.
Exactly. It's about otaku, and I think it's a great, funny series. And it's also serious, too. And Ogiwe is great because she's kind of a closeted yaoi fan.
Aren't all girls?
Aren't we all, ladies? Come on. You can tell me the truth. Okay. And she's an artist, and she likes to draw different, you know, shonen eye and things like that. But she's really, really shy, and she doesn't know how to break out of that shell. And I really wanted to... I did a lot of research on the character, and I read the manga, because obviously most anime is manga first. And then they make a series out of it. So I read the manga, and I really wanted to get into the character and develop her because she's so complex. You think she's, like, one-sided. Like, she's like, oh, I'm not an otaku. I hate fanboys, and I hate fangirls. But she's really not because she is one, but she's so conflicted with that inside because of how other people, you know, feel about fans sometimes. Yeah. I feel closest to. She was really cool to play.
Absolutely. So final question that we'll do real quick. Is in the everlasting quest to find out a better way to say what's your favorite character, which roles do you wish people would pay more attention to? Like, you did this role, you really liked how you performed in it, and maybe people haven't seen it as much.
Probably Genshiken. A lot of people don't know what Genshiken is.
Well, I know what Genshiken is.
Genshiken, it's a really good series because it's so funny because it's about otaku. So it's like, why would you not watch this series? It's because it's all about them. And they're college students. So if you're a college student, why wouldn't you check something like that out? I think it's great. I think it's a great, fun series. I just voiced Elisa Boskanovich in Street Fighter Cross Tekken, so get Street Fighter Cross Tekken. But that's a more like popular series that a lot of people would probably know about. Let's see, I don't know. Kuji Biki on Balance, which is kind of
a spin-off
of Genshiken.
Yeah, Genshiken.
that's a really funny, I think it's a hilarious series. It's really cute. I played Koyuki Asagiri in that. And that's another one of, like, an obscure anime that a lot of people don't know about. But I think they should, because it's really funny and really crazy and out there that some anime can become, you know.
Absolutely.
Some can be really serious, and then they can be really crazy. So I really like that one. So, yeah, get Genshiken and Kujibikan balanced, because they're awesome.
Well, thank you, fans, for listening to this interview. We'll be back another second with another interview. But, Michelle, thank you for spending some time with us.
Thank you very much.
And we'll be back with another interview in just a second. Hey there, my Toonami generation. We are back with another interview, and we are here with the legendary Kyle Hebert.
Hello.
My kumbaya brother from ShadowCon 2011.
Awesome.
You still remember that, don't you?
Good times. Good times.
For those who don't know what we're talking about in 2010, excuse me, for ShadowCon, somebody had the smart idea, let's schedule Kyle's and Kara's guest panel at 9 o'clock at night. And besides me, Gene, and Chris, two other people showed up. So it was just us singing Kumbaya, and it was the greatest panel ever.
Awesome. I think there should be more nighttime random song singing
panels.
Absolutely.
So, but Kyle is here at Anime Next, and we're going to ask him a few questions. So, first off, since we are a new network, let's start with the basic, easy question. How did you get started in the industry?
The industry. It came to me. The offer said, hey, Kyle, we're going to give you a job, make you a millionaire. If only were that simple. Now, I came at this from radio. Most voice actors come from on stage, on film, and I was always too shy for that, quite honestly. I wanted to do two things since I was a kid. I wanted to be on the air, you know, on the radio, be a DJ. Not a wah-wah-wah DJ, but, you know, actual, hey, coming up, this is, that was, and all that. And I wanted to also voice for cartoons. That started, like, when I was probably 8 or 9, I think, seeing Looney Tunes for the first time. That really planted the seed. So I ended up getting a degree in radio, TV, film. Got an internship at ABC Radio Networks in Dallas. Worked there for many years. And by the time I was working on a Radio Disney...
As Squeege.
As Squeege. How's that for a DJ name? Yeah, I heard... This was back in the summer of 2000, so 12 years ago, ladies and gentlemen. DBZ had the number one slot on Cartoon Network and Funimation... they opened up their doors to talking about promotions with Radio Disney, and that ended up happening. We gave away merchandise on the air and all that, everything. But they also said, hey, by the way, there's some open auditions coming in on DBZ, and they told me about it, and I jumped all over it, got really lucky. And I was already a fan of DBZ from years previous, so previously on Dragon Ball, I used to literally go around the house imitating Doc Harris, the narrator from the Canadian version. And then ended up getting Teen Gohan and taking over the narrator part from Dale Kelly, who was imitating Doc Harris. And slowly inherited some Chris Sabat characters like, you know, Ox King and whatnot. But Teen Gohan was the very first thing I tried out for and ended up getting. So that was a big, big achievement unlocked for me personally and creatively.
Achievement unlocked. So it was... So you were playing Xbox for life?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. I'm a casual gamer, you know. I'm not hardcore about anything. But.
Yeah, well, if you saw the press conference the other day, your heart probably... Hi, I'm Usher. I'm here to ruin the Microsoft press conference.
Oh, what is up with that?
So, of course, you've done animation, you've done video games. So, for you personally, what is the biggest difference between prepping... and doing the voice work for a video game and animation?
There's actually no prep work involved other than, you know, you answer the call and they say, hey, are you available Tuesday from 10 to 1? I'm like, yes, all right, be here and such time and such location. If you're lucky, they'll tell you what it's for. But you don't get the script ahead of time. You don't get anything to study, no materials. And it's like, hey, who am I playing so I can wiki it or something or YouTube some videos? Like, no, 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 none of that. You show up completely cold. You're a blank slate. Director catches you up to speed in under a minute. Like, this is what's happening, and this is what your character's doing, and go. And we're off and running, like an assembly line. Like, cue up the video, here's the first line. Watch it in Japanese to match the timing and how loud or soft it needs to be. And then, all right, record, take. Director decides, do one more. Yeah, boom. Sometimes it's one take Jake. Other times it takes 4 or 5. And then we just kind of slam through it in order. And if there's multiple characters, then we do it one character at a time. So I'll do a session with all my main character stuff, and then they'll say, all right, now we're going to have you do some bit parts. We'll have you do Walla, which is the background stuff, you know, crowd scenes and everything. So I'll do Man A or City Folk C, and then like, all right, so from this time to this time, 45 seconds of chatter about, oh my gosh, I can't believe the spaceships are coming, the aliens are taking over, and you get to make up dialogue at that point. All the Walla, all the background voices sometimes have that freedom, but generally it is scripted. So that's, yeah, prepping, eh. Same thing with video games. Told nothing in advance, show up to the session. The client's usually there, a writer, a producer from the gaming company, along with the director. It's kind of orchestrate.
Tell you how to die and how to grunt.
Exactly.
Which I had experience learning how to die from Kyle, by the way.
Yeah, I'm doing that. That's my next panel, actually. We're going to kill people at our workshop, literally. And we're going to let the audience decide their fate. It's like, all right, now give me the sound of someone on fire. All right, now let's decapitate you. All right, now let's have you hurl off a cliff and be impaled.
if I wasn't coughing so much this weekend, I would join you. So, of course, you've done a lot of legacy characters, very popular characters like Dragon Ball Z, Kamina, so it's a Ryu from Street Fighter. Of the legacy characters that you've done, which do you feel you've had the closest bonding with?
Well, DBZ will always be super special to my heart because that's what literally started my career. And, you know, if I weren't on DBZ, that wouldn't have led to other opportunities because that was my calling card. And that's by the time I moved to L.A. 7 years ago, thanks to Steve Bloom, he was kind of shipping me around to different studios going, hey, we got an import from Texas. He's new. Be good to him. He was on DBZ. So I kind of said, wow, this is cool. That's wow. This guy's really opened doors for me. So I owe a lot to Steve Bloom.
Yeah. So next question is, of the recent roles you do, and I'm not talking about roles you can't talk about, because we know there's always roles you can't talk about, but zip lip. But I'm talking about roles that, you know, recent roles the past couple years that that are out. Which of those do you find you've really connected to?
Kamina really meant a lot, because that's the first time I had such a big, iconic character on an anime in many years.
Who died by episode 6.
Well, 8, but yeah, it's like, wow, he makes it through a third of the show, really? That's it? But, yeah, that was... But he had a huge impact on the show, and obviously that's what affected the story best, I guess, to move it forward. So, I guess, other than completely selfish motivations as an actor, make him live through the entire series. It's like, I understand what they were going for, and it has more emotional resonance that way. So, yeah, Kamina is pretty awesome. Yeah.
Well, not to, like, because it had nothing to do with your voice acting, but when they killed him off, I was cheering.
Oh, my. Well, okay, everyone else likes Kamina.
But final question, of the roles that you've done, which roles would you like people maybe to check out more because you thought you did a really good job with this character and maybe it was a series not a lot of people saw?
Mm-hmm. I was particularly proud of, because I didn't get to use this sort of sound of my voice. I got to explore this sound with Jensen on Iron Man, the anime series. I was the lead villain on that. Not a lot of people saw it, but it was on G4, and now it's on DVD. I wish it was on Blu-ray.
Not a lot of people saw it because it was on G4, and nobody has G4.
But boom. But it is available now. I saw it at Target.
Yeah,
you can get it at Target.
Target for $20.
Yeah, or $15 even.
Well, at that point, you're playing, yes, another legacy, well, not a legacy character, but you're part of a legacy series.
Series, yeah. I'm in the Marvelverse, and let's see. I was proud of that. Another personal achievement unlocked is Super Skrull in the Avengers cartoon, which aired in Australia last week and it's going to air in the States on Disney XD in July. So
yeah,
I'm finally on a cartoon. This is what I've been wanting since childhood.
Not to burst the bubble again, but yes, you're appearing in a series that's going to be canceled.
Well, there's a difference. This is the verbiage. Canceled, not renewed. It's not being renewed. So it's not like they're going to say, oh, we're just going to stop showing it all of a sudden.
Yeah.
They made the episodes. They're going to air.
Yeah.
And they're going to probably come out on DVD and Netflix and all that eventually. But yes, they're kind of rebooting with a brand new Avengers cartoon. And the way I look at it is, okay, I'll just get to try out for Captain America and Iron Man again and Hulk and all that. I mean, maybe I'll get a shot at that. Hopefully. Hi, Marvel. Remember me? You hired me a lot. X-Men Arcade, Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, your trailers for Fear Itself, and the new Hulk series from last year. Hey, I'm your guy.
I don't blame you. I play the insecurity of Joe Quesada personally, but that's besides the point.
Alrighty.
I'm not going to get into comics. There's a whole other conversation.
Fair enough.
So thank you, Kyle, for spending some time for us and having
some
fun. You will... will always be to send Bondi Brothers from ShadowCon.
Kumbaya, my lord. Kumbaya.
I sang that when I got home. My mom just dropped her knees and said, "Where did I go wrong? Speak to me, Jesus."
We had a spiritual awakening at MetroCon, Florida.
Which scared me personally because, you know, we're Jewish.
Oh. Well, then.
My mother hates when I do that joke, but again, thank you, Kyle. Yo.
Oi. This man, what are you going to do? Now stereotype. Sorry. Yeah. This is getting racist. Oh, no.
But it's true. That just makes it okay.
All right, then. Peace and love, folks.
Yes, thank you. And we will be back with another interview in just a second. Hey there, anime fans and my Toonami generation. We are back here at Anime Next Interview Special here with our good friend Kara Edwards.
What's going on?
You know what? Sooner or later, I'm going to get you on my Christmas... I'm sorry, I have to call it by what it is. We're now calling it the Thomas's 8 Crazy Nights Special. Because to get the full Jewish experience of Hanukkah, we do 4 interviews a night, and then we say, you know what, Oscar it.
Nice. It'll have to happen. It'll have to happen.
So, but, you know, Kara's here. We're going to ask...
I'm here now.
Yep. Usually this is the part where we talk about how you get into the industry, but I think we have a better question. Let's talk about flying panties, because you're obsessed with flying panties.
That's a lead-in. Yeah, flying panties. There's a show that I voiced that's out now called Heaven's Lost Property, and one of the opening scenes to the series is there are literally panties flying through the air. So we call it the Flying Panty Show.
They're the Mighty Panties. They form the Flying V.
Yeah.
And they beat Iceland in the finals.
Yeah. Very good. It's actually, I. What's funny is, yes, it's a panty show. And in the humor, I kind of equate it to, like, Weird Science. Like, it's kind of got that frat boy humor.
Weird Science.
You know, lots of locker room action, lots of innuendo. But
I'm sorry.
I love this show.
Do I make you horny?
Oh, Lord.
Have you told them I watched that show way too much? Or that movie, excuse me.
Yeah. It's a great show, and I voiced the character Nymph. I love this show. I'm so proud of this show because even though it's a panty show and it's kind of silly and fun, Nymph, she actually goes through some very dramatic things. Like, I got to actually act out some really cool stuff. She lives a tough little life, and that was a lot of fun to do.
Well, since we talked about flying panties, real quickly, like, in 30 seconds, how did you get into the industry? We know that you started off doing radio.
I'm going to try to do the, like, yeah. I was teaching inline skating classes. One of my students said, "Hey, you should do radio." And I said, "Not with this Minnie Mouse voice." And they said, "Hey, how ironic, because it's Radio Disney." And so I was hired by Radio Disney. I worked with a guy named Kyle Hebert. We had the Squeegeeing Kara show.
I don't think anybody's heard of him.
6 years. I love Kyle. I did Radio Disney for 6 years. I got my first agent. She heard me talking on the radio, signed me on the spot. I went to an open call audition in Dallas-Fort Worth for Dragon Ball Z. Got cast, started doing anime, decided to pursue radio, followed a radio job all around the country, did morning radio for a long time, and then 6 years ago, quit radio, went full-time in voiceover, moved back to Dallas, Texas, started doing anime again, but I've been doing a lot of commercial work, a lot of narration, a lot of everything, but some really cool, like Heaven's Lost Property that just came out, oh my goodness, my mind just went blank, Black Butler, I actually have some shows that I'm working on right now that I can't talk about, but I'm really excited about. I have a couple of characters that, in fact, I am currently in the middle of voicing my single favorite character I've ever voiced. This character, it's a boy, beats Goten. As a favorite.
See, you have to make it hard on us interviewers, don't you?
I know. This one's good. This one's really, really good. And he's funny.
So, again, real quick, though. Next question is, what's harder to voice, a child or an adult?
I actually don't find it. Male versus female is actually probably... boy voices are hard for me to do. If you hear me voicing boys, they're all Goten. I have one boy voice that kind of doesn't change unless I do an accent. It really depends on the character. Difficulty is really based on the character. And, you know, when you identify with a character, even if it's, like, scenes that I did a show that I did not put my name on, but I'm so proud of this character. And she was, I mean, it was so tortured, and it was such an intense performance that I had to do. And you would think, oh, that must have been really difficult. But I identified with her so much. And somebody's figured out my stage name, so it wouldn't be hard to figure out what show I'm talking about. So I think it's more about, like, the performance and do you identify. And sometimes you get these characters that are just like, yeah, I'm not totally feeling it. I think that's when it gets difficult.
Okay. And now, of course, you've done some darker roles. You've done some more lighter comedic roles.
Yes.
Like Flying Panties and Heaven's Lost Property. So which do you prefer, darker roles, serious roles, or lighter comedic roles?
I like them both. If I have a preference, if I had to say one, I think the darker stuff, because I have such a young voice and I'm such a bubbly personality that a lot of times when I'm voicing shows or voicing characters like Nim for Goten or Videl, or they're me. Like, that's kind of my personality. So when I have to do really intense acting and I'm doing a role like, you know, Mina in Darker Than Black, or I wish I could say the name of the show, that character that's really intense and really dark, it's so out of my element, and then I get to kind of tap into another side of me that I thoroughly enjoy. I especially love when a director, if it's a director I haven't worked with and they don't have the stereotype of me already, and they cast me completely against type and give me a chance to do something really cool, like, that's my favorite.
So of your recent roles, not including the one you can't talk about, but ones that you can talk about, which characters do you find you've bonded with the most?
That's a great question.
I'm just full of great questions.
I think Videl. And I know that that's kind of an easy go-to answer because obviously Dragon Ball Z was a really big show. Videl, this actually hit me 2 weeks ago. I was at a convention and somebody said, you know, how do you think you're like Videl? And it was the first time I had thought about it, and so now I think, because my answer surprised even me, and it was, if you think about the character Videl, she's this really tough girl. She was raised to be, she's a tomboy. She was raised to be super, super tough. I mean, her dad is Mr. Satan. But at the same time, she's very vulnerable. She's a girl who likes a boy, and she wants the boy to like her, but she doesn't want to give away too much because she's the tough girl, so she doesn't want to be, you know... So it's this kind of inner conflict that goes on with Videl where she's like, I'm awesome, no I'm not, I'm insecure, and I want you to like me, and do you like my hair? But I don't care that you like my hair, because I'm cool. So I think all females can identify with what that feels like to have a crush or have something that you really want and have that inner, like, insecurity, vulnerability, I'm scared, no I'm not, I'm cool, no I'm not. So yeah, I think Videl.
So last question, of the roles that you've done that you can talk about, we have to, you know what, Funimation, just give us a, you know, legal document saying we promise not to air this until this point. We
right.
promise, you know what, just let's get it out of the way.
This is how we keep you guys coming back. We just, you know,
unfortunately,
yeah.
This is why we have to do 5,000 interviews.
Right.
But the last question is, of the roles that you've done, which role would you have liked people maybe to check out more? Maybe it's a role where you did a really good job on a voice, but maybe not a lot of people have seen it.
Okay, great. Another really good question. Chaos Head.
I'm sorry. I'm not laughing because it's bad. It's a good anime.
It's a good anime, and I love that character. Kozue is the one that I voice, and it was memorable. And I guess maybe I think about roles from, like, which ones are the most memorable, which one, you know, when it comes to recording the experiences and who I was working with. And maybe for me it's less about the show and more about the experience that I went through. And that was Caitlin Glass was the director on Chaos Head, and it was a really cool experience. The characters in the show are great actors. I think I was really surprised that Chaos had barely made a blip. Obviously, Heaven's Lost Property, I'm super proud of. What are some of the other ones? I mean, boy, these next couple coming out, I really hope people love them. I'm gonna say Chaos Head. I was surprised that didn't make a bigger impact.
Yeah, Chaos Head is a really good show. I've seen actually the entire show. I saw it when it came out. I think it was on Crunchyroll. It's just that laugh that when the first thought that comes to mind when I think of Chaos Head is the guy in the room with all the figures and.
Yeah, but how many people can identify with that? I mean, seriously.
Unfortunately, I can't identify with myself, unfortunately, if you see my room.
Like, if you saw my studio, I'm serious. Like, I'm a total... I think if you walked in my studio where I record, I have my own studio, and when you walk in, and it's this huge room, and it is literally nothing but, like, memorabilia and action figures, and I have Star Wars action figures that are signed by the people. I've got Walking Dead action figures. I've got... Like, I'm a total nerd. Yeah. And so I identify with shows about nerds. I get it. I like it.
Well, thank you, Cara, for spending some time.
Word.
We are going to get you this year on the Absolution Network Christmas holiday special. We are, I promise you, somehow. And so, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for the Toonami Generation Absolution Network Tom Prerogative Anime Next interview special. Now, they have to haul me away because I quoted Weird Science. But thank you for tuning in, and until next time, Toonami Generation, stay golden.
Word.
And we're back, and thank you for listening to those interviews. I hope you enjoyed it, and that is it for this very special Anime Next 2012 Convention Report here on the Absolution Network. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And remember, this is not it in the coming days. In fact, hopefully, maybe even the same date as this episode being released. You can check out photos of the convention. I'll be posting a photo blog up on the site. So definitely check those out. I have many photos. A lot of them are good. Some of them be blurred again. That's on me, and the fact that I had the camera on auto, and, you know, the way lighting was playing with the camera. So I apologize for some of that, but yeah, a lot of great pictures. Can't wait to post them up. So for those who'd like to write in the show, tell me how I did. If you saw me at Anime Next, and want to let me know something you saw that was great, or want to say something great about the Anime Next convention. There are several ways you can contact the show. The first and most important way is you can leave an email. You can do that by emailing to absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution132@yahoo.com. You can also leave us a message on our Facebook page by going to Facebook and searching out the Absolution Network, and you can leave us a comment there. And for any future people who might be listening to this on iTunes, if we ever get up on iTunes, you can leave us a comment there. Of course, while you're here, remember to check out all our other 132 production sites. Chris Stanton's Random Redbox Reviews does a great thing with there. And of course, my other podcast, 132 Productions, which includes Comic Book Crazy, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, the Tokyo SOS podcast, a Godzilla podcast reviewing every Godzilla movie ever made. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And of course, remember to check out all our other friends who you can find on the sidebar of the site. People like Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box and From Crisis to Crisis that he does with Jeffrey Taylor. Not to be confused with the podcast he does in an alternate dimension with Jeffrey Taylor called From Marriage to Mephisto, a Spider-Man podcast. Speaking of Spider-Man podcasts, Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Syker's Major Spoilers podcast, and of course Scott Gardner's 2 True Freaks. And of course, all our other friends on the sidebar of the site, check them out. And that is it for this episode. So until next time, my Toonami generation, stay golden.
A cursed samurai. You have succeeded again in eluding my effort. But I am not worried. For one day,
on board the Absolution. You are listening to the Toonami Black Hole Megamix by DJ Clark Nova. Don't sleep on it.